Who are you?
Who am I?
Yes.
I am Sally, and I'm the canine dietitian.
What messages do you find yourself consistently repeating to your clients?
There's just so much misinformation out there. Raw is better than this, or cooked is better than that, or kibble is better than...
This is a spicy one.
Oh, God.
What could we be feeding our dog that is killing them without us knowing?
Everything. Everything's going to kill your dog.
A dog's diet needs to be on point because ultimately it's going to affect their behaviour. The example I always give is...
He doesn't need to be on his injections anymore. He stopped itching and his behaviour is just, it's just turned around.
Let's talk quickly about kibble versus raw. Where does that sit for you? And also...
I think fresh feeding a dog is a very privileged position to be in for a lot of people. There's a lot on the internet of brand bashing.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies... I see this a lot with anxious dogs. If you feed a dog from a bowl...
The vet's recommendation for a poorly dog of chicken and rice. What are your thoughts on that?
Advocate for your dog. I've had vets refuse to treat people because they're all fed their dogs, which isn't acceptable, and that's not okay. The thing with the big three kibble companies, as they're known, is grain-free foods killing dogs, in a nutshell. Is actually...
In this week's episode of Caffeine and Canines, I am joined by Sally Proctor, aka the Canine Dietitian. In this episode, we talk about all things canine diet and nutrition and how it might have an impact on our dog's behavior and even their reactivity. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. A really thought-provoking conversation about what might be affecting our dog's behavior without us even realizing. Thank you very much, Sally. Where did you come from today, Sally?
Huddersfield.
Whereabouts?
Kirkheaton.
Oh, yeah?
Near Mayfield. Oh, yeah.
But you're from just round the corner, right?
Yeah, I'm from, born and bred in Leeds, grew up in Headingley, just round the corner. I actually, strange story, used to play rugby when I was a kid.
Did you?
So I used to play at Leo's.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because I'm the only girl. Well, I'm the only child. My dad wanted a boy, so.
Oh, so he's just like, you're playing rugby. And you moved to... Kirkheaton?
Kirkheaton in Huddersfield, yeah, 10, 11 years ago.
How come?
Followed a man.
Oh.
Stuck there now.
Yeah. Do you have kids?
One little boy is 5 and 2 stepsons. Oh, who are, oh my God, 20 and 17.
Okay.
Yeah, all boys.
Who are you?
Who am I?
Yes.
I am Sally and I'm the canine dietitian.
Very good. What made you get into that?
Oh, I mean... So my background is recruitment, strangely enough, for a long, 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 long time. Lockdown hit and I actually lost my heart dog, my German Shepherd, in lockdown to cancer really suddenly.
Right,
really
okay.
Suddenly. And she was 7.5, 8, so really young. And then it just led me on a spiral of, could I have prevented it? Is there anything I could have done? What was she eating? And then I started a pet treat business.
All right, okay.
To kind of get... awareness out there to owners about what to feed their dogs and what they're doing and how it can maybe impact. Yep. And I just felt I wasn't doing enough. So I then looked into canine nutrition. I got a mentor on board. I got qualifications, even though you don't need qualifications. And that was 3 years ago now.
Oh, so, very good.
And it's just grown and grown and grown and grown a bit more.
In a day-to-day life for Sally and the canine dietitian, what does that look like? What do you offer to people?
Okay, so it's just me. There's nobody else, so nobody else working for me, just me offering the consults. And it varies. Everything's online. There's nothing I have to do that's face-to-face, unlike if you go to a vet and they have to do an examination, there's none of that. And I offer packages from just a Zoom consult for people that want to have a chat with me about potentially moving to more of an enhanced option or just want a little bit of advice about what they're feeding, how they can make it better, what they should be doing, shouldn't be doing. All the way up to kind of, you know, 3-4 months support with poorly dogs who have got IBS issues, kidney problems, and anything in between. I formulate recipes as well.
Oh, okay.
For owners, cooked and raw, that are balanced.
Yeah.
That take into account an owner's budget.
Yeah.
And also the dog's needs as well.
Okay. When you're doing consults, I guess the dog food industry and dog nutrition industry is akin to dog training in that there's lots of conflicting advice out there for dog owners. What messages do you find yourself consistently repeating to your clients?
There's just so much misinformation out there. I think the first thing that people are very surprised at when I talk about nutrition is I talk about nutrition as a whole as opposed to one feeding method.
Okay.
So when clients come to me, they automatically think that I'm going to put them on a raw food, and that might not be the case. So that's one misconception, that one way of feeding is better than another way of feeding.
Right, okay.
It's about the dog that we're feeding.
Okay.
So we figure out what that dog needs, and then we choose a feeding method. So that's a huge misconception, that raw is better than this, or cooked is better than that, or kibble is better than wet. And there's too many misconceptions around that. That's the first one that I find. The second one that I find is about things to add into your dog's diets that are going to make them live forever.
Okay.
There's a lot about that on the internet. And a lot of people come to me going, oh, what can I just add into my dog's food?
Gotcha.
To make sure that they're healthy.
A little bit like the magic wand in dog training, right? What can I do acutely that's going to fix my dog's reactivity?
Just throw a bit of ham at it and it'll be fine. Yeah, it's exactly that kind of thing that I have to deal with as well. It's the quick fix that people want.
Yeah.
There's, you know, so many brands out there that promise, oh, my supplement's going to do this or it's going to do that. And actually, if the diet and everything else isn't right, and the behaviour and the health, mm-hmm. no matter what you add into your dog's food, it's not going to make a difference.
Gotcha. So we're obviously not nutrition experts, but we always allude to the fact that a dog's diet needs to be on point because ultimately it's going to affect their behavior. The example I always give is if a child is constantly eating blue Smarties and full of crap, then their learning is going to be inhibited, right? And it's obviously going to promote certain behaviors and whatever it may be. How do you feel a dog's diet could affect their behavior? And we'll say could, but how do you feel it does.
I work with so many clients. I'll give you one example actually recently. A Welsh Terrier. Yep. Very reactive, with a bite history of his owners. And they went to work with a trainer, and he said, I don't think you need a trainer at the minute. We need to work on if there's any underlying issues, which is ideal for me. I love it when trainers do that.
Yep.
It turned out that this poor boy was just, he was itchy, he was allergic to life. He was just basically living in a bubble of just being pissed off all the time.
Yeah, constantly.
Yeah. And we needed to find out what was happening regards his diet to try and ease that behaviour a little bit. Mm-hmm. And for him, it was his gut. His gut was absolutely shot to pieces. He'd had a history of worms, a lot of medication being given when it didn't need to be. And he just needed a bit of time to just heal.
Yeah.
I actually got a message the other day from the trainer they started working with saying he doesn't need to be on his injections anymore. He stopped itching, and his behaviour is just—it's just turned around. So that's one example of how a diet and figuring out what's wrong can actually impact the behaviour. The other thing is when a dog is fed something that it's not utilising effectively for energy. I'll use certain carbohydrates as an example. And I'm not saying this about all kibbles, but if a dog comes to me and it's overexcited and its ability to learn isn't quite there or focus.
Yeah.
We look at the levels of those carbohydrates because they spike.
Yeah.
Dogs typically utilize fat and protein for their energy, where they get their energy from. So it's akin to humans. We feel fuller for longer when we eat more protein as opposed to complex carbohydrates, which will spike our blood sugar, in turn spike our cortisol, in turn spike reactivity, and then we just end up in that huge spiral. So in that sense, switching a diet, not that I'm against kibble, I'm definitely not, but switching a diet would help that dog be able to regulate and learn and then regulate and then learn and then not be in that cycle again.
Yeah, I mean, of course, same for humans. If we've ever been in chronic discomfort, we're not ourselves, right? We're immediately a little bit more snappy and our tolerance to frustration's a little bit lower. And if it then affects our sleep, then that's obviously a massive one. If anyone's ever been through sleep deprivation of raising a puppy or even a child, then you're totally different once you're on half the amount of sleep. And of course, I'm sure our diet, you'll know more better than me, will affect our dog's sleep, and then it's going to affect learning, right?
So yep.
That's interesting. Let's talk quickly about kibble versus raw. Where does that sit for you? And also, where's the trade-off? And what's your opinion on, I guess that's one of the biggest questions in the dog food market, right? Kibble versus raw food, which is better? I know you've alluded to the fact that there's no one size fits all, but where might that conversation or topic of conversation sit with the canine
Okay.
Dietitian.
So I like to come from a place where I think fresh feeding a dog is a very privileged position to be in for a lot of people. It costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
I've got two huge Neapolitan Mastiffs.
Crikey.
They eat nearly 5 kilos of meat a day. It's big. It's a big amount. I can do that. The kibble raw thing and the whole debate around it, it's tricky because we have to look at the dog as an individual. If a dog came to me on kibble and they were itching, they were scratching, they had, you know, IBS issues, I would immediately move them onto it. Not because it's a kibble, but because it's got so many things in it that we don't actually know what's causing that problem.
Gotcha.
So it's about removing any and eliminating any problems that it might be. And usually that involves single protein. And typically what I do with clients is I'll move them onto a single protein wet tinned food. There's many on the market out there that don't have any veg in, any carbs in, that's just single protein. It's a bit costly, but it's the best starting point to move forward.
Is there any brands that you could maybe name off the top of your head?
Happy Dog is a good one.
Yep.
Riverwood as well. Riverwood Mono tinned food. They do veal, horse, venison, goat, wild boar, and they're all single proteins with no carbohydrate source in there. So it just makes it easier to heal, and then we know what's causing the problem and what isn't. So in that way, it's not actually a kibble versus raw, it's a nutrition thing. And I always allude to that. People, there's a lot on the internet of brand bashing.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies, and you'll probably find this in training, will, instead of selling something on their own merits, they have to utilize another brand to sell their products.
Yeah.
And that's something that I find problematic as well, because you sell it on your own merits as opposed to demonizing something.
Mm-hmm.
Then we end up in this whole world of good and bad food, and it shouldn't be like that. If a healthy dog came to me and they were on kibble, I'd make suggestions to maybe make it a little bit better. And by better, I mean maybe adding some moisture to it, maybe adding a topper to it. Sardines are a good one to add in.
Okay.
And what people need to remember is when we start adding more and more things to our kibble, we can unbalance it. And then we're feeding more calories.
Gotcha.
And then the dogs become bigger. And then we don't know why we're in that situation.
Yep.
You also have to remember as well that a lot of these foods have been trialed. So 5, 6, 10 years, some of these companies do food trials. They're not all bad. We humanize something as looking fresh versus
a
biscuit kibble that, it's like feeding my dog cardboard.
Yeah.
Instead of looking at it from a nutritional point of view. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense.
And people are quite shocked when they come to me because they're like, I just expect you to put me on raw.
Yeah, I would have.
And that's what you know, a canine nutritionist isn't here to do. I don't promote raw feeding over other ways of feeding.
I guess there's so many different factors in terms of some people might not even have the freezer space. They might not have the budget that, you know, we can always make a better choice, right? It doesn't have to be the optimal choice. There's always better choices.
And we shouldn't shame people for that at all. Like, people shouldn't be shamed because
absolutely.
That's how they feed. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Always better. There's a trainer that says we need success not to be successful. And it just means about making things just slightly better.
Yeah, absolutely.
A problem we have as a dog training school is some dogs, more so nowadays than maybe ever before, are getting more and more fussy with what food they're eating. What do you think might cause that? I've got my theories, but what do you think might cause that, and how could we potentially remedy that for dogs that aren't motivated to take food in training?
Love it. This is one of my favourite topics, fussy eaters. So
I'm excited.
For me, there is no such thing as a fussy eater. There is a reason why your dog is not eating, and it's either physiological or behavioural.
Yep.
There's two ways, or sometimes both, where it's a mixture of the two. So typically clients will come to me and they will say, my dog's refusing food, I don't want to eat it. And I go, okay, when are they refusing food? The biggest time where dogs refuse food is in the morning. That's what I usually find.
Yep, same.
And there's a few reasons behind that. If your dog is going too long between feeds, it's going to be in pain and discomfort. So roughly 8 to 10 hours, dog's digestive system after eating goes, the brain sends signals to it to go, right, let's get ready to eat, let's crack on.
Yeah.
And the digestive system starts kicking up, the pancreas starts producing digestive enzymes, bile acids are produced, and there's nothing in the stomach. Gotcha. So what we end up with is we end up with effectively all of these acids eating away the stomach lining, which mm-hmm. is causing pain, heartburn-like symptoms, indigestion. And then what does the dog want to do? They want to get it up. So that's when we see those hunger pukes, as I call them, the bile, foamy, white.
Or yellow sometimes.
Yeah, or they'll go outside and they'll eat some grass because they just need to get it out because they're in pain.
Yeah.
You then go and put Fido's bowl down and they go... I'm all right.
Gotcha.
Because they're in pain. They don't want to eat it. Then what can happen is they start having that negative association with food because they associate the food with the pain and they just go, no, I don't want to eat it. So there's a few ways that we can help with that. Reduce the time between feeds.
So increase frequency of feeding throughout the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, this never really tends to be a problem with dogs that are hand-fed a lot. Or we utilise their food for training because they're kind of fed throughout the day quite a bit.
Yeah.
You normally need to give a snack and a night around 10 o'clock if you can, and then bring their breakfast forward to around 6 or 7.
Yeah.
You can then start bringing the breakfast a little bit later and a little bit later.
Gotcha. I know, like, to tie the bridge of that.
Yeah.
Not being hungry for too long.
Okay. I had some clients that go, well, they last fed at 4 and then I feed them at 9 in the morning. And I'm like, oof, that's a long time.
Some
dogs will cope with it. My two are fine. Others aren't. So that's one way of doing it.
Gotcha.
The other thing that we want to look at is behavioural, which might be quite interesting for you.
Yep.
So I see this a lot with anxious dogs. If we feed a dog from a bowl, they are refusing their food, they'll probably do one of two things. They will back away from the bowl and they don't want to eat it. And we go, God, they're fussy. Mm-hmm. Or they get the food and they take it from the bowl and they put it onto the floor to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
If we have a dog that is anxious about life or their surroundings and they have to put their head in a bowl, they can't see anything.
Yeah.
So they will take the food out to eat it on the floor, or they will just refuse the food completely. And no matter what you put in that bowl, it's not going to work. So feeding your dog from a flat surface...
Okay.
It's really good.
Like a raised flat surface?
Like
or
a board. Just a board. Okay. Or some people will use lick mats. I mean, I'm okay with lick mats. I sometimes have this view that sometimes people make dogs that don't need it work too hard for their food and they increase frustration. And they're like, I just want to freaking eat my dinner. I just want to eat it.
A lot of people will use slow feed and things to slow their dog down, but it increases the frustration. And then by the time they go back to a normal bowl, the dog is eating it quicker than they have done before because they've had to work so hard and be annoyed.
Or they've frozen it and put it in a cup.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be happy about that. I just want to eat my food. So the hand feeding thing with dogs is great. So remove the bowl. Just remove the bowl, feed from a flat surface, or feed from a shallower bowl as well. There's loads of other reasons why dogs can be fussy. The worst case I had was a Chihuahua. The only Chihuahua I've actually ever dealt with, strangely enough.
Okay.
And he wouldn't eat. He would not eat at all. And I did a lot of research and I looked at him and found out that he had been born with water on the brain. So his eyes were quite far apart.
Yeah, okay.
And it technically means that it's like having a dog with autism.
Okay.
So we had to feed him on a certain surface that was nice for his feet to be on in the dark.
Interesting.
In a crate. On a risen board, and he ate.
Crazy.
It is crazy, and this is what I do. I take the whole aspect of what's going on and try and come up with solutions. If your dog is still refusing as well, you have to think about certain things. So are they an intact male? Have they been around a female that's been in heat? Because that can reduce their appetite. That was a nightmare with my boy when my girl was in heat.
Mm-hmm.
He would just stop eating. Heat the food up. That's one of the best things you can do. Even if you raw feed, get it in a pan and flash fry it, literally for 10 seconds. We're not cooking the bone.
Yeah.
Dogs taste with their noses, so their taste buds are in their noses. So if we can increase the palatability through scent, it just increases their desire to eat as well. I've never yet had any of those things fail.
Interesting.
Ever. Touch wood.
The vet recommendation for a poorly dog of chicken and rice. What are your thoughts on that?
I've done several posts about this on Instagram.
Oh, okay.
They're like, I look back and I cringe a bit. Because I think, not last year, the year before, I was just so confrontational on social media. And now I'm like, no, I'll just leave it now. Okay, chicken and rice. Rice isn't a bad food for dogs. It's a complex carbohydrate. And my views, and the views of a lot of other vets as well, are that when we have a dog that's poorly or has IBS, diarrhea, vomiting, their cortisol levels are going to be quite high as it is because they're ill. That's just what happens. And their blood sugar will be high too. So we go and feed a complex carb that's quite high on the GI mm-hmm. index. We're going to spike that blood sugar again. So you end up with this double spike of a poorly dog.
Yeah.
They then aren't really able to digest rice properly.
Yeah.
It is tricky for dogs. And then also feeding chicken, which is one of the highest kind of proteins that dogs have intolerances to as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of, it just exacerbates things. The best thing that you can do, if your dog has IBS symptoms and you're like, oh, where's that come from? Is just carry on feeding them as normal.
Interesting.
For 2 days. Because sometimes switching their food to something they're not used to can have more of an impact than just seeing it out for a couple of days.
Yeah.
The other thing, there's some things you can add to the food that will help, though. So sweet potato or pumpkin, butternut squash, steamed, mashed up. That will help kind of firm everything up a little bit. And psyllium husk, which you can get on Amazon.
Mm.
And I would say around, we start at 5 to 10 kilos. You want around, yeah, I'd say half a teaspoon, between 5 and 10 kilos, and then up it again by half a teaspoon for your dog. And that is, it's a bile acid binder, so it slows digestion down and it firms everything up as well. So instead of just switching your whole food, try just seeing it out. And there's different types of poorly stomachs. There's the horrible mucousy blood that's in the large intestine. That's usually 90% of the time from stress.
Okay, yeah.
So we'll see it in dogs that maybe very reactive, very anxious, and something's happened, they've been pushed over their threshold, and then 2 days later you see that.
Yeah, same that.
That, for me, just feed as normal. If we have, like, liquid, horrible diarrhoea, give it a day. If it's not got any better, then we contemplate moving on to something like steamed whitefish, sweet potato, maybe a bit of egg if they'll tolerate it.
But not chicken and rice. Again, you know more than me, but it never really made sense to me to take a poorly dog and then go and make a dramatic change in their food whilst they're trying to recover from
absolutely something, right? Especially if they're raw fed and they don't have those carbohydrates, then they're not used to processing them.
Yeah, it's probably just adding stress to stress in a way, right?
Yeah.
Are there any other areas that you might have a little bit of conflict with vets? Because for me, a vet treats dogs, cats,
mm-hmm.
guinea pigs,
mm-hmm.
rabbits, hamsters, etc., etc., goldfish, right? And I don't actually know how much study they do on nutrition. I'm sure you'll have a better idea than me. Similar to behavior, though, I can imagine it's limited.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes dog trainers will fall out with vets, but will have different opinions to vets on certain subjects. Do you find there's any that lie there for you as a dietitian?
It used to be regards fresh feeding that vets just couldn't get on board with it. And I used to struggle with, well, why? It's fresh feeding. And I think the more that I've kind of grown and the more that I've built my business up, I actually realise why vets are against it is because they see so many. You've got to appreciate that when vets see a dog, it's because they're poorly.
Yeah.
And then they go, well, what are you feeding? And it's this. Vets never see dogs when they're healthy. It's like, oh my God, you look amazing. What are you feeding your dog? Yep. Oh, they're raw fed. Oh, great. Yay. Well done.
It's like we only see dogs that have behavioral issues.
Yeah.
So when we're making judgments about dogs and their lifestyle and routine, where our sample pool is only dogs with behavioural issues for the most part, right? And I guess exactly.
So you have to appreciate that they see all these problems, and then they see people doing raw feeding, fresh feeding as I call it, cooked or raw, badly. And it is done badly a lot of the time. Most people that come to me that are raw feeding their dogs aren't doing it properly. And they're missing certain vitamins and minerals and nutrients in the diet that can cause the issues that vets see. And then there's the whole issue of bacteria, which exists. We can't pretend it doesn't. Some vets have a stance on it that they won't tolerate it at all, and others do. I think my advice to dog owners is, if you know what you're doing is right and your dog is good on it, advocate for your dog. I've had people, vets, refuse to treat people because they're unfed their dogs, which isn't acceptable, and that's not okay. Change your vet.
Yeah.
You're quite, you know, yeah, within your rights to change your vet. Yeah, absolutely.
Where do you stand on the tinfoil hat wearers, the conspiracy theory that vets want to sell you products that are produced by companies that potentially sponsor their modules in university?
I used to believe this, and I feel like really
stupid.
Think
it has any legs?
Oh, I don't, right, okay, so...
Because typically the kibble they are recommending isn't of the best quality, right?
The thing that you've got to remember about the... I just have to play devil's advocate, strangely enough, because I never play devil's advocate. The thing with the big three kibble companies, as they're known, is they put a lot of money into that product. They put a lot of money into testing, into feed trials.
Marketing.
They put lots of money into that product. Scientists, nutritionists, a lot goes into it. And I think to a certain extent, we humanise dog food. It becomes humanised. You see it all the time on Instagram. You look at that amazing bowl and I'm like, my dog's bowl never looks like that. Nobody has got time for that. I don't have time for that. Nobody does. And it starts to become humanised. And I think it fits certain people's narratives. Mainly, I'm going to get crucified. Mainly raw feeders who are very... they won't listen to anything else apart from what fits their narrative. And I'm not saying all raw feeders like that, because I raw feed. Mm-hmm. So the issue that I have with that is it then becomes scaremongery.
Yeah.
And yes, whilst vets don't do loads and loads and loads of time on nutrition, they're still vets and they've worked really hard to be where they are. And they do have some knowledge of it. Maybe I think a little bit more knowledge needs to be into the different types of feeding that are available. So they're able to give well-rounded information to allow dog owners to go away and make their own decisions. Instead of, you must feed this and this is why you must feed this. Because if they don't know anything else, then what are they meant to do? They're being told that, you know, this is the piece de resistance of dog food.
Mm.
However, food like that does have its place. I have loads of people come to me asking me to formulate recipes for chronic kidney disease and I won't do it. And they go, but why? I say, because my recipes haven't been tested. They haven't been tested for the phosphorus levels.
Yeah.
These recipes have. So whilst people will demonise them, they have a place in the market for certain types of dogs. They shouldn't be the first go-to, though.
Are there issues with them... or those type of foods where they're not disclosing the ingredients perhaps as well as they should?
Ingredients-wise. So this then doesn't become about, I don't think it becomes about the company, it becomes about the system. So it's that term, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah, the regulation of
things. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And marketing of pet food and what you can and what you can't put on labels and ingredient splitting and all of this. And people see it as being sneaky and dishonest. And then what happens is they start questioning everything else. And then this fear starts and it just snowballs and snowballs and snowballs. And people lose their ability to just rationalize stuff and look at it from a logical point of view. And it becomes so emotive. And I have huge problems with that. Not that I feed my dog those dog foods, I don't.
It's almost like because we love our dogs so much, we're marketed our... feelings are targeted by marketing, right? And we're scaremongered into thinking that a certain company's way is the best way to do right by our dog, and it's getting a little bit sneaky. As it happens with training as well, don't do this with your dog because you'll cause this. Don't ever try this with your dog because you'll cause this, so on and so forth. And I guess it's a common theme throughout all aspects of owning a dog, and dog owners are constantly presented with such difficult conflicting advice from training, nutrition, vets, etc. I think there's a must be a way we can start allowing things to be navigated a little bit more easy for them. But even myself, you know, I've been in the dog industry for 7 years now, and you're only now telling me things that I've heard for the first time, which I'm finding fascinating. So, you know, people that are maybe just got their first dog, for example, that are reading online and yeah. and consuming YouTube videos and things like this, so difficult for them. And you can empathize, right?
You don't. And most people come to me and the first question I say is, why have you booked a consult with me? And they'll go, I'm confused. I don't know what I'm doing. I've looked on the internet. There's so much information out there. What is right? What is wrong? And it isn't necessarily about what is right and what is wrong. It's about what's right for you and your dog.
Mm.
And nobody can ever tell somebody who lives in a flat, who has no freezer space and who has an immune compromised partner or child who has cancer to feed their dogs raw food.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so many factors that go into it, but people are guilt tripped.
Of course.
To go, you know, you mustn't love your dog if you're not feeding them that. Yeah, and that's bad.
Right. Okay, we're going to move on. We put a poll out or a question box out for some Q&A's, okay? So these are from our audience. We've already touched on a couple of them, so I'll skip them out, but we're going to try and make them as quick fire as we can, I guess. So that might be difficult for us, but first question is, raw eggs, yes or no?
No.
Well, okay. I want to know why. Go on.
Right, go. So one, I think about dogs as having a feeding experience. So we're talking about, you know, we want to give our dogs the best possible food, yet let's just give them a bowl and it's slop and everything. So when we are doing raw feeding or fresh feeding or adding on top of your kibble, raw eggs are harder to separate and portion up than a cooked egg. Fact. Okay. But let's get down to more sciencey stuff. So there's an argument that raw egg white contains avidin, which binds to biotin and stops it being absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people will go, yeah, but there's loads of biotin in the egg yolk, so it just negates it. And I go, well, I'd rather just have all the biotin from the egg yolk and not have anything standing in between it.
Gotcha.
The other thing it contains is a trypsin inhibitor. So trypsin is a digestive enzyme that's utilised to digest protein. That can inhibit protein absorption by 7-10%, which is why bodybuilders don't neck raw eggs anymore.
Interesting.
Because it's actually not the best way of getting your protein. Cook your eggs. Hard boil them, soft boil them, poach them.
So eggs, yes. Raw eggs, potentially no.
No, I mean, listen, if you're rushed for time and you have to put an egg in, just crack it in.
Gotcha.
Like, go all the way. Do not add eggshells to your dog's food.
Why?
Oh, too much calcium.
Okay.
So if you're already feeding an 80-10-10, for an example, and you add to it, which is how I feed my dogs, to balance it, and you put an eggshell in there and there's already 10% bone, it's too much calcium, too much calcium. And then don't add your eggshells to kibble and things like that. Because again, it's optimal calcium in it. We're just adding too much.
Gotcha.
We can end up with loads of issues.
We can throw the balance off by adding things onto things that should already be balanced,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Would you ever, I think you've already answered this in a roundabout way, but would you ever add any kibble into a raw diet?
Yeah, combo feeding's fine.
Okay.
I work with a lot of combo feeding for dogs who have weight issues, but also need to be trained and maybe have things like IVDD, spondylosis, Dachshunds, for example. They are typically the best example I can give of breeds where we need to get the weight down, but we need to utilise their food instead of using treats.
Yeah.
So we utilise the kibble. We give them the raw for the breakfast, raw for the dinner, low calorie so we can feed more of it to fill them up.
Yeah.
And we utilise a kibble or a cold pressed for their training treats to get their brains working to burn the calories as opposed to walking.
So the concept that a dog's digestive enzymes will adapt to a particular food type, e.g. kibble or raw, and therefore we should then not mix kibble and raw is absolute fucking bullshit?
Yeah, fucking bullshit.
Good.
So I'll give you the human example. You eat a burger, chew it up. Do you then digest the tomato, the lettuce, and the bun and the meat at different rates? No. Yeah. Dogs' digestive systems, pH, it will change depending on where they are in the digestive process and what they're eating. It is not changed that much that it is incapable of combining two different foods together. Because you'll put veg on your dog's food. It's a carbohydrate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one's where logic completely goes out
absolutely.
The window, right?
That's one of my favourites.
Okay. Is there a preferred or best kind of meat to give a dog?
Oh. It depends what you're looking to achieve with your dog.
Okay.
So we'll have people go, you can't feed that, it's not low fat. whereas it's not the protein type, as in beef, pork, chicken, turkey, that is high in fat. It's the fat percentage in it. So I can go to Sainsbury's, other supermarkets are available, and buy 7% turkey mince, and then I can buy 5% beef mince, which is higher in fat.
Yeah.
The turkey. But people demonize proteins as being low fat, high fat, but it's just the fat content in it.
Gotcha.
So you've also got to look at, is your dog, does your dog have any intolerances as well?
Yep.
Depending on what meat you feed. So there's really no preference. I don't have a preference what people feed their dogs. There is that thing that kind of circulates. It tends to be in the fresh feeding community of variety is key. And I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, what does it mean? Or balance over time. And my ADHD brain goes, well, what is time?
Yeah.
What is it? Like, is it 2 weeks? Is it 6 months? Like, what is time? And there's no quantification of any of it. Rotating your proteins is fine because certain proteins will have different vitamins and minerals, higher levels, lower levels. But ultimately, meat doesn't contain everything that your dog needs. So if you are just feeding meat, you're not doing it right.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Next one. How could we potentially test if our dog is getting the nutritional profile that they require?
Okay. So there's actually not an accurate test out there. You can do blood tests, which will typically tell you calcium levels, phosphorus levels, B12, folate levels, which is B9. You can figure out if they're deficient in those, and that will usually point to an underlying health condition as opposed to they're deficient and they're not getting what they need to be in their diets. So B12 typically is low in dogs with IBS issues because it's low because of the gut malabsorption. We start then becoming a bit more tricky when we need to look for vitamin D. Vets are very reluctant to test for things like that in this country, and the tests are quite expensive. Avoid hair tests.
Okay.
Avoid blood tests for allergies. There's no such thing as a food allergy in dogs. Like 0.02% of dogs have a true allergy. They're normally intolerances.
Gotcha.
Avoid those tests that are marketed everywhere for your dog's intolerances because they give false positives, and we have to eliminate the possibility anyway. So you're just burning your cash. There's no point doing it.
Roger.
So there's no concrete way of telling if your dog is properly deficient in things. Zinc, for example, you need to go into the liver.
Right.
To take a sample out to see, and no vet's going to do that. And absolutely rightly so, because they have to justify every time they do something like that to a dog. So my advice would be just check in with somebody like myself just to check what you're feeding is balanced.
Brilliant. Okay. Legumes for dogs, yes or no?
Oh, no.
And why?
Oh, okay. So there's been this whole grain-free debacle that grain-free food's killing dogs, in a nutshell, is actually the concept of DCM, heart conditions with dogs, is being associated with grain-free food, when actually the evidence maybe sways towards it's what they're swapping for the grains. So peas, lentils, chickpeas, all of those types of things actually inhibit taurine absorption, which is essential for heart function. There is the argument that once they're cooked, they are a little bit better. However, I would avoid them. They're full of lectins. They're not great for gut health. I wouldn't be eating them myself every day. If they are lower in your dog's food than number 6 or 8 on the ingredients list, I wouldn't be too worried. Certain cooked dog foods have a lot of them in. And what you'll find is if you then go back and look at the ingredients on the back, there'll be ingredient split as well. So they'll go on about kibble doing it, but it's all right when a fresh dog food ingredient splits. So there'll be red lentils, green lentils, and lentils, and they split it so it appears lower down on the ingredients list.
Ah, I see.
And that's what forms part of your dog's protein as well, which isn't as bioavailable as meat.
Gotcha.
When we look at the protein content on that, we think, oh, that's good, but where's that protein coming
Interesting.
From?
Interesting. And they've just divvied up the lentils to account for a smaller percentage of the food so it can be shot down to the bottom
Absolutely.
Of the ingredient list.
Yeah.
Very sneaky.
Which is what they complain about kibble companies doing.
Interesting.
But that's all right, because it's a fresh dog food.
Motherfuckers.
Yeah. Sneaky tactics.
Okay, next question. Best single protein cold pressed food.
Oof, I don't think there is a single protein cold pressed food out there. There's a couple of cold pressed. Wilson's do a cold pressed dog food.
Yeah.
There's a new one called Coya on the market, COYA, that do a cold pressed dog food. I think they have peas and things in though. So right. Again, I'd be a bit. I would, if you are looking at a cold pressed, suggest an air dried dog food instead, like Zeewee Peak. Like the premium. And it's amazing because it's fully complete and it's single protein and it doesn't have any carbohydrates in it either. And it's dried. So you can just take it any way you want. You can utilise it for training. You can
hand feed it.
It's perfect for that. It is perfect for that.
What was it called?
Zeewee Peak. Z-I-W-I. Peak.
Brilliant. That's very good to know. Grain or no grain?
I'm not fussy. Again, it depends on the dog. I know that's a bit of a cop-out, but... I tend to stay away from grains. I stay away from them with my dogs because they give them diarrhea.
Right.
It's just, but they just can't be. It just ends up coming out. It's not, they just can't seem to process it and digest it properly. I'm not saying somebody else's dog can't, but I'm going to go no grain. Absolutely.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's go no grain.
No grain. No grain. No grain. What, this is a spicy one.
Oh, God.
What could we be feeding our dog that is killing them without us knowing?
Everything. Everything's going to kill your dog. Fucking hell. If you go online, everything kills your dog. I read a proposal, actually, that somebody sent me from another nutritionist, and I won't mention the names, but everything in this... literally, it was, you need to change what... type of carpet you have in your house, it's killing your dog.
Jesus.
You need to change the water, it's killing your dog. I'm not filtering my dog's water because I've got two huge dogs, they drool in it.
Gosh.
It needs to go.
Yeah.
So I'm just, no,
it's not happening,
it's
right?
Not, and it's not realistic. And I think we live in this world where we just see everything on social media being amazing, and actually that isn't the case, and it's not real. It's not real life. There's so many things that will kill your dog. Loads of things. There isn't actually anything food wise that's been scientifically proven to go, oh yeah, that's killing your dog, like brand wise or anything like that.
Gotcha.
And I think if people step away from what's killing my dog and just feed the dog that's in front of them the best that they can, that's all you can do. Apart from onions. Onions and grapes will kill your dog.
Right, okay.
Yeah, like, stay away from them.
Definitely onions and grapes.
Absolutely.
What about chocolate?
This is interesting. Dark chocolate, yes. Milk chocolate, no. It's the cocoa percentage.
Gotcha.
So my boy ate a full bar of dairy milk and I chanced it and was like, you're 80 kilos, you're going to be absolutely fine. And he was like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, you're a bell end.
But don't feed your dogs chocolate.
No,
I'm not saying do
don't,
that.
Like,
definitely don't
go
do
out
that.
And do it. But yeah.
A Terry's chocolate orange won't kill them, apparently.
Yeah, just, I think we wrap them up in cotton wool a little bit.
For sure. Well, actually, a story that can trump that, and again, not advocating your dog to eat chocolate, but Kirky, who works here, his roommate once upon a time left out a hamper, a Christmas hamper, four bars of dark chocolate did his dog eat and was absolutely fine.
There you go.
Well, I'm just going to touch wood and caveat, do not feed your dogs chocolate, but... There have been instances where dogs have eaten and consumed a large amount of high cocoa percentage chocolate and been fine.
Yeah.
Here's my favourite question. Do Japanese mushrooms help your dog live longer?
Why am I laughing? Oh.
Do you know why someone's asked that question? Is there a...
Yeah.
Is that like lion's mane?
Yeah. There's loads of different... I feed my dogs mushrooms occasionally.
Japanese ones?
I don't, maybe, I don't know. I just got a bit obsessed with mushrooms at one point, and I was like, I'm going to grow my own. And then my husband didn't physically slap me around my face, everybody, but was like, sort your life out. Like,
a metaphorical, give your fucking head a wobble.
No one's got time for that shit, stop it. There have been studies shown that they have cancer-fighting properties. There is a very interesting company I urge people to look at called Unity, Y-U-N-I-T-Y. They're an American-based company, and they've put a lot of research into products to help with a specific form of cancer in dogs, hemangiosarcoma, which is what I lost my dog to, which is a very aggressive form of cancer. Is adding mushrooms into your dog's food every day going to stop them getting cancer? No. Because cancer is a lot of the time genetically predisposed, as in humans.
Yeah.
We can limit things in our diet and our lifestyle that will help, but it's not going to stop us from getting it. And it's not going to stop your dog from getting it, unfortunately.
No magic mushrooms then?
No.
We'll go to the last question here. Even if I buy fresh meat for my dog, I cook it because I'm worried about food poisoning and worms. Am I overthinking raw food?
You're not overthinking it. That's very sensible. So, if you buy raw dog food from a dog food company, that is meant to be fed raw. It's been tested. It's been sent off for testing for Salmonella, Listeria, E. coli.
Gotcha.
It is way more tested than the food that we buy in the supermarkets, because that's not meant to be eaten raw. We're not meant to eat chicken legs raw. So they're not, they don't go through that stringent process.
Gotcha.
So if you buy your meat from the supermarket to feed your dog raw, that is fine. Freeze it for 10 days or cook it. Now, the problem you're going to have when you cook it is this. You're going to go, my dog needs a kilo of raw food a day. So you're going to get a kilo of meat, and you're then going to cook it. And what happens is
it's no longer
a kilo of meat, and it loses the moisture, but it also loses the nutrients. So we end up underfeeding, and then the dog doesn't get what they need to get. And that's a lot of issue I have with online recipes, is they'll tell you a kilo of this and actually you need more because you're going to be feeding it cooked to your dog. But this person is right. You do need to either freeze it or cook it, especially
if it's not come from a raw food company, right? Okay.
The other thing is fish. Always, always, always cook salmon and whitefish, because they can have flukeworm in it.
Right.
And even freezing it can't really get rid of it. So cook it.
Right.
Cook it. Sardines, sprats, herring, things like that, you're fine. Whitefish and salmon, cook it.
Interesting. That's very good to know.
There you go.
I've given my dogs raw salmon before, but now
I
know not to.
They're still alive though, aren't
they? They're still alive,
exactly. Yeah. That's fine.
Okay, before we sign out, you might not be able to answer this question, but are there some rules of thumb you can guide people into that may be a little bit more confusing than ever in the current dog food industry?
Yeah. Okay, first one is, do not get your advice off a Facebook group.
That's amazing advice for dog training as well.
Second one is, don't get your advice from a Facebook group.
Yeah, okay.
They are toxic places.
Cesspools.
Yeah, full of people that are just obsessed with hearing their own voices and full of opinions, I call them, which are facts. Opinions put to you as facts.
Yeah.
And they don't know you, they don't know your dog, they don't know your family circumstances, they don't know your dog's history, they know nothing. They're also not insured. Like, where does the liability stop? I'm fully insured for what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Something goes wrong, where do you turn to? You can make things worse, so avoid Facebook groups. If you have a dog and you're struggling with what to feed them, I always say go to your vet first as the first point of call. If there are any health issues, if you want to move your dog from a processed food, or i.e. a kibble, and you want to do more of a fresh food, the best bit of advice I can give people is do it slowly. Cook something up for your dog once a week and give it to them in one meal and get the taste for it. And then if you want to swap it over, speak to somebody like me to balance a proper recipe for you. Do it gradually. I have so many people with great intentions that go, yeah, I've moved on to raw food, and they've not researched it, or they've gone to a pet shop. Pet shops are sometimes the worst as well, that will go, yeah, here's some meat and bone and offal and that on your way. And the puppy's 3 months and it ends up with so many issues later on because it's not getting what it needs. So always think about where the information is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they telling you that? What benefit have they got to telling you that?
Yeah. Even if it's just to feel that they've been... Right.
Yeah, like that righteous, that sense of righteousness is sometimes so, it's so wired in people. But always, always question why is that person telling me that information? So, you know, why is that raw company telling me that that kibble company is bad? Well, they sell raw food.
Yeah.
Why is the kibble company saying raw food's bad? Well, they sell kibble.
The so constant let's victims go to marketing, right?
Yeah, let's speak to somebody in the middle.
Yeah.
And they would, that would be my best advice to people.
For those that are listening, how can the canine dietitian help them?
So, I offer loads of different consults online. So my website's just www.caninedietitianwithat.co.uk. Start with a Zoom consult with me. That's the best way. A Zoom consult, you fill in a full health questionnaire. I get a full picture of everything that's going on with your dog. And we make adjustments where needed. The thing that I want people to realise is, as well, is I work with you as owners. So I work with people that owners who have severe autism, who have Asperger's, who need to be communicated with in a certain way, where we will set up phone calls instead of email support. I'm there to make the owner's lives easier, not to tell you you need to do this and not pay your electricity bill, because that's how much it's going to cost you. So yeah, loads and loads of different options on my website to book in with me. And then I've got the Canine Code membership site that's launching in March, which is a nutrition membership site for people that don't have the budget to speak to me one-on-one.
Brilliant. That's good. That's the future.
That's the future.
Awesome. Sites. Anything else you want to plug?
No. Just brilliant. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming along. I found that really, really interesting. Good. And I'm definitely going to change how I at least think about things.
Fab.
And perhaps, obviously, point a few more people in your direction. And, yeah, very thought-provoking.
Good.
Thank you very much for coming down. That was great.
Thank you.
Wrap it up. Thanks a lot.